So, the raising of Lazarus. This is John's miraculous sign number 7. I warn you before we start, though, this is a very emotional story. Going back to last week first, though, Lindsay was preaching on sign number 6. That was the healing of the man born blind. And those of you who are here will recall the story. Jesus met this man begging by the side of the road. He spat on the ground. Yuck. He made some mud with his saliva and put it on the man's eyes. And this man was obedient. He washed in the pool of Siloam and went home seeing. And then we had the Jewish Inquisition. A bit like a court case. I could understand it very well before the Pharisees. Do you know there were 3 points that I particularly took home from last week's message, and I think it's good to start with those 3 points from last week. The first is what Lindsay said about Jesus using saliva or spit, something I'd never heard of before. The Jews considered that to be unclean, but Jesus had come to change everything. What was unclean was going to be made clean because of Jesus Christ. And then there's that interplay between physical blindness and spiritual blindness. Until we truly know God, we are in a state of complete darkness. And thirdly, there was a point that Lindsay made about healing. You may recall her saying that many would have thought that this man was healed when he had his sight. But Lindsay emphasized that that was not the case. That true healing only came when this man was thrown out of the synagogue, found by Jesus, understood that Jesus was the Son of Man, and worshipped him. That's meant a lot to me this week. Of course we prayed that my mother would make a physical recovery, but sadly she did not do so. But she had been a follower of Jesus Christ for many, many years. She had already received the perfect healing that only comes through completely trusting in him. We've got a map we're going to throw up again. So I want to indicate where these places are. You'll have to try and imagine where Jerusalem is because the map doesn't go quite far enough. But Jerusalem is about here, where my hand is. Bethany is about there. And this thing here is the River Jordan. Okay, so Jerusalem's there, Bethany's there. Now, I don't know whether anybody has ever been to this part of the world. I think Margaret has. But the road between Jerusalem and Jordan is horrible, isn't it? It's like the moon, actually. It's a desolate landscape that you won't want to go past. Well, in chapter 10, because Lindsay did 9 last week, and we're doing 11 this week, just to tell you what happened in chapter 10. In chapter 10, he really upset the Jews. So much so that on 2 occasions they tried to kill him. Once by stoning, and then at the very end of the chapter, again we're told they tried to seize him, but he escaped from their grasp. And so what we have now is exit Jesus. It's still not quite his time, and so he leaves Jerusalem, and he goes down to here on the River Jordan. A good place to go. The influence of the Jewish leaders was not so great there. This place, Renthosophobus, whatever it's called, was Samaria, I can't pronounce that, was close at hand. If you went farther east, you would actually go out of the Jewish influence altogether in the mountains of which is now Jordan. And it was almost completely Jewish leader free. And because that road between Jerusalem and Jordan is so bad, I mean, even in those days, it's not just the road, it's the fact that this mountainous country, which is very, very desolate, it's not the easiest of trips for one of your enemies to make. They probably leave you down at Jordan out the way. And he was right on the edge of the Roman zone as well. So he could have gone another 30 miles east, and he'd been free from their taxation and oppression and their pagan practices and the need to worship the emperor, all the things that they did not like as Jews. It was also a nice place to live, actually. Well watered, very fertile, lots of fruit and vegetables. The first place I ever tried mangoes, actually. a good place for rest and recuperation for Jesus and his followers. But then Jesus receives a message. One of his very best friends, where she's told that he is the one that Jesus loved, was sick. This was somebody called Lazarus, the brother of Martha and Mary. What would you do if you had that sort of news? Well, on Monday, you know what I did. My mother was in intensive care. We went down to Southampton General Hospital. You'd get in your car and go and see them as soon as reasonably practical, wouldn't you? It wasn't so easy in those days. I mean, you had a serious walking job there. I reckon that's a 2 days walk from the valley back up to Jerusalem through some pretty inhospitable landscape. But even in 33 AD, you would normally expect someone to go. But verse 4 says that when Jesus heard about his friend, this is what he said to his disciples. This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. You know, I wonder what the disciples thought. I guess they probably took the view that Jesus could just say a very special word and Lazarus would be okay. After all, that happened before, hadn't it? Anyway, it was best to stay down in the Jordan Valley, away from the Jews, not so far away from getting out of the Roman influence, away from trouble, rest and recuperation, plenty of mangoes. Good call, good call. But 2 days later, Jesus announced that he was going back to Jerusalem to wake our friend Lazarus up. And this confuses the disciples. Because if Lazarus is asleep, surely he'll wake up. Not because of an alarm clock. I think cockerels did a pretty good job in those days. More particularly, though, where Lazarus lived was trouble with a capital T. You're going right back into the frying pan. And they didn't want Jesus to go. He'd escaped by the skin of his teeth last time. The Jewish leaders' intention were clear. And they were more about knives and the Ides of March than Fluffy Bunny's intentions, I can assure you. I've actually been to Bethany. I wasn't intending to. I was in Israel when I was 22. One of my sisters was nursing in Tel Aviv. And I had a bus pass and travelled around Israel on a bus, which probably wasn't the wisest thing to do. And I was staying in a youth hostel in the old city of Jerusalem and trying to catch a bus in the West Bank down to Bethlehem from the Palestinian bus station, and I ended up walking through Bethany and saw the site that was supposed to be Lazarus's tomb. You know, if anybody here has any doubt as to whether Jesus really did live on this earth, think on this. I think it's really exciting that the places mentioned in the gospel stories are real places. You know, whether the church or shrine is on an exact location is not that important because they were certainly within meters, within yards of where they actually took place. Do you know, historically, there's much, much more evidence for Jesus than there is for Julius Caesar. Just think on that if you have any doubts. Acts chapter 7 records that after Jesus' resurrection, there was a Pharisee called Gamaliel, and he said these words when the Jews were hell-bent on killing the early apostles. If their purpose or activity is of human origin, it will fail. But if it is from God, you will not be able to stop these men. You will only find yourselves fighting against God. Any here who do not know and follow Jesus need to think seriously about this. Jesus really did walk on this earth. His followers really were convinced that he was the Son of God. They really were convinced that he did die and rose again. And they were prepared to give up their lives for this. And that message changed this world. Back to John 11. Jesus and his disciples have made their 2-day trip through the desert mountains and are back in Bethany on the outskirts of the town. But Lazarus has already been gone for 4 days. He probably died at exact time almost when Jesus was down in the Jordan Valley and received the news. And Martha and Mary had a haste full. We're well used to that in those sort of circumstances. We're told that many Jews had actually come out from Jerusalem to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha hears that Jesus has arrived, she goes out to meet him. And she almost chides him to start with. "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." She's probably a bit upset, actually, that Jesus had taken such a long time to get there. I mean, he'd spent 2 days down with the River Jordan. He hadn't come back immediately. She must have known that. Didn't her family really matter to Jesus? And this is their conversation. It's firstly Martha. "I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." And then Jesus replies with these words, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" They're familiar words, aren't they? You've heard them all so many times. You now know where in the Bible they come from. Quoted at almost every single funeral service. They are a great encouragement. But so often our minds switch off after the words, "I am the resurrection and the life." Pay careful note of what Jesus goes on to say. That promise, this promise, is only for those who believe in him. It is in Jesus they will live even though they die. It is whoever lives and believes in Jesus who will never eventually die. This is the secure and firm hope of those of us who have accepted Jesus Christ as Lord and Saviour. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 55. "Where, O death, is your sting? Where, O death, is your victory? Thanks be to God. He gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ." It's a secure hope that my mother had from the age of 16. But it begs a question here this morning that I'll come back to later. Where do you stand before God? Anyway, Martha goes back into the house to her sister Mary. "The teacher's here," she said, "and is asking for you." Now this Mary has appeared in the Gospels before. Verse 2 of chapter 11 says she was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hand. And we're told that Mary got up quickly and went out to meet Jesus. And she's followed by the Jewish mourners and visitors. They think she's going to Lazarus's tomb, maybe to take some flowers, maybe just to mourn for her lost brother there. She doesn't do that. She goes to the right place. She goes to Jesus, to her Lord, and falls at his feet. The right place, at the right time, in the right way. Think about that. In such a circumstance, she does the right thing. She goes to Jesus. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. And Mary says this to Jesus. "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." This is an emotional story. Jesus sees her crying. Sister Martha, I bet Martha was in floods of tears. The visitors are weeping. We are told that even Jesus was deeply moved in spirit and troubled, and he asked where Lazarus's grave was. And then the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. He himself wept. The Son of God, fully human, who fully understands and fully cares. Isaiah 53, surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Try and picture the scene. You've got Jesus and disciples on the outskirts of the village of Bethany. You've got Jesus and David at the front, the disciples behind, watching, listening, waiting, not knowing what was going to happen. You've got Mary running out, falling at the feet of Jesus. And she cries. You've got Martha. And you've got the friends and visitors and mourners overcome with emotion. And then you have Jesus. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odour, for he's been dead 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Can you imagine being there? Can you imagine that scene? I wonder what happened next. I think probably there would have been absolute silence, wouldn't there? Disbelief. Is it really Lazarus? And then the realization that it was. An extreme joy and hugs and laughter and praises to God. From sad to unsad. From complete grief to absolute joy. The Master had spoken and Lazarus was again alive. It is quite a story. What's the significance of this? A few suggestions. Firstly, there is a reminder that Jesus wants to share in both our joys and our sorrows. He had clearly spent many happy hours with Lazarus and his two sisters. He loved them and they loved him. He cared. He was deeply moved. He himself wept. Psalm 139, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. What words. What a promise. And then this reminder of one of Lindsay's points from last Sunday morning service. Healing may, through God's grace, result in relief from physical ailments. But that is not the true healing that the Son of God actually came to bring. Yes, of course we should lift others and ourselves to God in prayer when they or we are sick. But true healing is spiritual. It's about the restoration of a broken relationship with the Almighty God through Joe and Jesus Christ. And it is really that that we should seek for and that we should pray for. My mother wasn't healed physically. There won't be a Lazarus-type miracle on the 24th of July. I know that. But I do pray that as her life is remembered, that someone at that service will be convicted of their own need to follow Jesus Christ. Because that is the spiritual miracle that Jesus came to bring. A miracle that takes place in somebody's heart. And then this. You would have thought that this miracle, that very emotional event in front of Lazarus' tomb, was by far the ultimate. This was the absolute clincher. There was no smoke or mirrors or optical illusion here. The people in Bethany themselves had buried Lazarus. They certified his death themselves. Jesus was miles away, and he stayed there for another 2 days anyway. Lazarus had been there for 4 days. And so you had the water into wine, the healing of the official's son, the feeding of the 5,000, the person at the pool of Bethesda, the walking on the water, the man born blind, and know this. This was firm evidence that Jesus was indeed the Son of God. You know, what should that crowd of people done? Yes, rush to Lazarus to see what's really him. Yes, rejoice for the sisters Martha and Mary. But surely all of them should then have fallen at the feet of Jesus, just like Mary had done, and worshipped Jesus, and followed him, and accepted his message, and accepted that he was the Son of God. This is the great sadness of the story. To some, it was the last straw, and they sought to kill him. And this is what happens afterwards. Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did put their faith in him. But some went to the Pharisees and told them about what Jesus had done. Note this, they did not dispute that this miracle or any other miracles had taken place. No argument about that. Back to the chapter. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing, they asked. Here is this man performing many miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. As I said, they didn't dispute the signs and the miracles that Jesus was doing. Rather, the issue that they had a problem with was that they could see the result of this. If Jesus continued in this vein, everybody would follow him. It would mean the end to their position of power and their position of control. What has changed in 2,000 years? Jesus' call is still exactly the same. And the problem with us is that we try and continue to remain in control of our lives and do not completely surrender what we should do, which is our will, our all to God. Then the passage goes on. Then one of them, named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than that the whole nation perish. Then John adds his own comment. He did not say this on his own, but as high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation, and not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God to bring them together and make them one. And that means you, and that means me. And so we come back to that question. Where do you stand before God? We have been reminded by Lindsay of these miracles of Jesus over the course of the last few weeks. And the crescendo has been continually building. And that morning outside Lazarus' tomb in the village of Bethany, it reached a deafening silence as the crowd stopped and looked at Jesus, and he cried into the tomb, Lazarus, come out. And then this once dead man walks back into the sunlight. The call of Jesus comes to you this morning. Whatever your name is, it is for you to come forth and follow him. There are no longer any excuses. You cannot sit on the fence. You are either for him or you are against him. Will you follow? Will you fall at his feet? Will you surrender all to him? Some of you might have been a bit surprised that it was me taking the service this morning and not Lindsay, bearing in mind what's happened over the last 48 hours. However, I knew my mother very well. She was a Methodist local preacher for nearly 50 years, Margaret, and she would have not wanted me to withdraw, would she, Lindsay? She would have wanted me to tell you about the God that she loved and served throughout her life. And it's not easy, this story. Lazarus, the words of the funeral service, the death of a loved one, the cry and the weeping, the tears, and the climax at the grave. But yes, it's also the best of opportunities. because my mother knew before she stood before God, and it was in the right place. She had received the earthly version of the true healing that Jesus came to freely give through his death and resurrection. And that's a tremendous comfort to me now. And it's a tremendous challenge for all of us. And this is another song my mother loved. When the trumpet of the Lord shall sound and time shall be no more, and the morning breaks eternal bright and fair, when the saved of earth shall gather over on the other shore, and the roll is caught up yonder, I'll be there. When the roll is caught up yonder, when the roll is caught up yonder, when the roll is caught up yonder, I'll be there. Make no mistake of the question I'm asking you this morning. Will you be there?